Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
We're back. Welcome to a brand new season of On the Continent. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lassie Watson.
After the summer recess, it's business unusual for Barca. How are they going to make their wage bill ends meet? And will the sums add up to that La Liga title, or is that Atletico's to lose? Disposable cash is also an issue for all the teams in the French Ligue 1. All the teams, that is, except for PSG. Is the season over before it's big an? And Zagreb, Piraeus, Glasgow and Bern in Switzerland, the Champions League is back and we're following it to the parts of Europe others fail to reach. Should we start off with Barcelona? What a season it's going to be for them. I'm going to leave Lars for a moment because he's going to tell them that annual income, £20, annual expenditure, £20, and sixpence, result disaster. But first, Andy, they're in a mess, but it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it has. And I think you're absolutely right, Dotton, at the start of this, the dawn of this new season, to let the Lars financial rageometer bob up to the appropriate level before we get stuck in. But yeah, it has been coming for a while. And as we've said before, it's an extraordinary situation where the best player in the world and the best player of his generation, possibly the best player of all time, is out of contract and everything's deadlocked. Not only are Barcelona not signing him, but no one else is signing him either because the financial commitment required is just too much in these times. Now, a lot has been made of Barcelona's current problems being in these times. This was coming for a long time, as you said. The Bartomeu reign was a mess, a financial disaster, because they never knew when to say, or he never knew when to say no to players. So obviously so much has been made of the enormous amount that Messi has been earning, and he seems to have agreed a new contract that he'll be ready to sign at least a 50% pay cut, which will be stretched over a rather longer length of deal than you would expect a player of his age to get. But they would have been almost okay with that amount, even though it's eye-popping amounts that we're talking about for Leo Messi. It's at least partly commensurate with the sort of status he has as the greatest. If you pay your other players sensibly, that's fine, I think. If you look at Bayern, when they said no to, when Pep Guardiola said to Toni Kroos, we're going to have to let you go because we can't pay everyone 10 million a year when you go back 6 or 7 years. When you look at, and obviously they always hate to be compared to Real Madrid, but when you go back to the first Galacticos era, when they were saying, okay, well, if we're paying Figo, Beckham, Zidane, 6 million a year, then you're going to have your Raul Bravo and your Ruben on 150,000 a year. And I was there when Emilio Butragueño, the great Emilio Butragueño, who's then the sporting director of the club, earnestly told me in a room overlooking the pitch at the Bernabeu that, well, these guys are in the team because they tell the superstars what Real Madrid is about and what the town is about and what the history of the club is about. It's fine to say you need to balance the books as well. And that was a huge part of it. But Barcelona never managed to do that. Ter Stegen, Busquets, Alba, all these players were given the wages they wanted, and in some cases more. And this is a huge problem because, of course, as we've discussed, Lars, this is the worst ever environment in which to get rid of your fringe players, especially when they're on huge wages, because who else is going to take them?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to go back to the whole just spend less. We did that, and that's fine. I think we all understand that. I think it's worth pointing out that sometimes it can be difficult. A really interesting example of how Barcelona got to where they are, we can go to Munich to see, because Bayern have had to let David Alaba go. They could have theoretically found the money to give him the kind of contract he wanted, but they had to put their foot down and say, listen, if we hand out those sort of contracts again, we'll end up like Barcelona. But we're also seeing now this summer Leon Goretzka being linked to moves away, you know, players reportedly being disgruntled because they put Leroy Sané on too much money. I mean, when they brought Sané in, they really pushed the boat out and they made him one of the top earners, and he's been slightly disappointing in his first season. So now you have like Kingsley Coman and Serge Gnabry, who play and are as productive for them as he is in the same position, who feel like, hey, why am I not making that money? You know, Goretzka, who's a key player for them, when he's meant to renew his contract, he'll look at Sané and say, hey, I want that. So this sort of thing, it's difficult to manage, let's be clear on this, but it's clear, like Andy was just saying, at Barcelona there are just too many players that have been put on too high a salary, which is, I guess, something that can happen when you're very successful. Like when you have players who, like Busquets, who've been part of one of the greatest club teams ever and is such a big part of that club, and he goes to the board and says, hey, look, you make tons of money every year, I can see the balance sheet, you know, give me a big salary. You understand why you end up in that situation. But then there's also stuff like they've spent the last 3 years, they've had an average outlay of over 300 million euros per summer in terms of player spending.
And that's just the transfer phase.
Yeah, bringing in, you know, Coutinho and Dembele, and bringing in Griezmann and all these guys who've not really fitted in. Right, they've raised some by sales as well. But, I mean, the numbers are quite dire. And what we're looking at now is, I mean, we're still waiting, because listeners might be aware, I mean, we have pretty savvy listeners on this pod, but I mean, the way the financial controls work in La Liga, they're different to FFP. FFP, as we know it, is, you know, UEFA, or in England, the Premier League, of course, will sort of look at your books retrospectively and see, oh, did you spend more than you were supposed to? And they have a look at it. Whereas in La Liga, what they do is that the league will project into the future, and, you know, you will hand in financial data to the league and they will analyze this and come up with a number that is the highest number you'll be allowed to spend going forward.
It's like in France, it's can you meet your obligations, yeah. basically.
So they're preempting this instead of, you know, I guess they realise the clubs will find it easier to ask for forgiveness than permission if they, you know, without naming specific clubs. But, yeah.
Well, we are naming a specific club by doing this section, but carry on.
Exactly right. So the number for next season for Barcelona hasn't been made public. But what's been reported is that their salary cap for next year could be as low as 200 million euros or even 160 million euros a year. Now, that's a pretty abstract number if you're listening to this, but just by point of comparison, 160 million euros a year is roughly what Crystal Palace are spending on their wages. 200 million euros a year is roughly what Tottenham are spending, slightly more than what Everton are spending. So this is the sort of territory Barcelona could be forced to trim their wage bill down to, which is a really hard thing to do in a summer where, again, no one wants to take on big contracts. And especially, again, I mentioned Dembele, Griezmann and Coutinho. Like, all of these are players I'm sure Barcelona would be happy to move on now. But getting a transfer fee for them is going to be hard enough. Getting someone to take the entirety of the contracts they're on, it's going to be very hard.
This is the business side, and it is difficult to change business culture as it is to change football culture. But the remaining question is whether whatever they do, or what do they need to do to achieve their purpose, which is to win La Liga? What do they need to do? Can they, in the mess that they're in, have a chance at really being title contenders?
Well, what they need to do first is make sure the players they have signed, so Memphis, Aguero, Emerson Royal, Eric Garcia, are actually allowed to play for them next season, because they're in a position at the moment where they can't register them with La Liga for the campaign because they don't have the money to do so. And these are players who they've actually signed. And, you know, they're faced with the prospect, if they don't create the necessary room on the wage bill to get them in, to just having to leave them out of the squad.
That's mad.
So
that's bonkers.
You know, they'd be paying them to do nothing. I mean, there was a suggestion in France that, you know, maybe Lyon would take Memphis back if Barcelona couldn't afford him. We're not at that point, but basically they're going to have to make some really tough decisions, because as Lars was saying, there's a lot of high earners they want to get rid of, but like the two major ones that we've heard of, and Coutinho is too rich for the taste of many. Ousmane Dembélé is currently injured, and he will be injured until probably, what, November? And you're really looking at Antoine Griezmann, who in normal circumstances they would like to keep, I think, but they really can't because his wages are quite enormous and he has value out there in the market. And Miralem Pjanic, who was bought for 60 million initial fee last season, and it really hasn't worked out at all, and Ronald Koeman clearly doesn't fancy him. Now, there are possibilities for them to go back to their former clubs. Of course, we've heard a lot about a potential swap between Antoine Griezmann and Saul of Atletico, which I think in footballing terms would perhaps suit both clubs. It would suit Atletico a lot more than it would suit Barcelona. And as Lars and I have discussed, wouldn't it be an interesting little twist that in helping Barcelona out in a funny way, Barcelona would be giving Atletico the striker they need to win the league for a second successive season.
Indeed.
But again, I think with both that and the possibility of Pjanic going back to Juventus, Atletico and Juventus are more than aware that Barcelona need these deals more than they do. At the current wages, they can say, we can't pay that. And Barcelona can posture and say, well, we can't pay any of their wages if they go out. It's coming to the point where they're going to have to. If they really want it to happen, they're going to have to. And they're going to have to swallow the fact that, you know, players who've still got a lot of transfer fee to be amortized, they're just going to have to swallow those losses in order to gain some short-term liquidity. Otherwise, you're facing complete inertia.
We do always encourage listeners to tweet us any questions that you have. You can tweet them to @footballramble, @AndyBrassel, @LarsSeverston, or @DottonAdebayo. And we've got a tweet from Shabir Ahmed, this is, we kind of answered this, but I think there's slightly more to this than what we've said already. Shabir says, I'd love to get an update on the transfer situation at Barcelona and would be interested to know if and how they've sorted that situation out. It's not simply a question of they haven't, is it, Lars?
It kind of is. I mean, most summers, that question would be, ooh, who are they going to sign? You know, who are they leaving? I mean, again, as we've said, right now, the transfer situation is mainly them trying to encourage people to go away and finding places they could go to so they don't end up having to, like, play five-a-side down at the beach all year because they haven't been registered. There's nothing else they can do. It's an absolute mess. The upside for Barcelona is, you know, it's a sort of tacky old saying, but in every crisis there is an opportunity, and there is some truth to that. Because of the sort of disastrous financial situation, I think players like, you know, Pedri's going to be a key part of the team. He's going to play every week. No one's going to displace him. Ansu Fati, when he's healthy and at his best again, you know, he's going to get a lot of game time. You know, there are young players saying maybe this is the season Riqui Puig actually like gets some consistent game time and can be the player some of the Barcelona fans would like him to be. There are young players here, and there is the core of a team that could be very, very good. And I guess with some of these sort of slightly, some of the more misguided purchases, you know, trying to find a way of making them go away, if they successfully do that, there should be ample opportunities for some of the younger players.
I mean, it's the worst possible summer for Pedri to be playing without a break.
Yes.
Seeing as that's
an odd decision, isn't it?
Leo Messi's partner of choice. But again, I think you look at Fati and you look at Elias Moriba, and they've got a bit of an issue. They're trying to agree a new contract with Elias at the moment, who looked great when he came in at the start of last season. And they should be the future of Barcelona. They're also the most attractive potential signings. And do they get to a point where, as you said, Dotton, at the beginning, the possibility of them winning the league, I don't think is completely off the table. If they can register these players, they get the young bodies around them, like Elias, if they re-sign him because he's missed a bit of pre-season because of that. And if Pedri's serviceable and Riqui Puig comes in, then great. But if I'm a big club, I'm looking at Ansu Fati going, I think I'll test the water there. I know you need the money. Why not? And how much they need the money, they have this curtain raiser, the Trofeo Joan Gamper, after their founder, which, interestingly enough, they're playing Juventus in as well. It was announced this week that they're going to have to play it behind closed doors. And they were thinking, well, normally you make 6 million from the tickets you sell for that, even though it's a pre-season friendly to all intents and purposes. With the reduced capacity, they would have made 1.5 million euros. And the headlines in the press in Catalonia are, Barcelona will miss out on 1.5 million. If they're at the point where they have to count what they're making from a 30% crowd in a friendly, you know they're counting every penny.
Elephant in the room, do they actually need Messi? Does Barca actually need Messi? I know greatest player of his generation and all of that, but even at a 50% pay cut, he is a baggage, isn't he?
No, I see, this is the thing. You're still talking about, like Andy was saying, possibly the best player of all time, who is such a key part of the team, but also their image. I think, I mean, if you lose Messi, I think a lot of their commercial deals won't be worth quite as much as they are now. I mean, I think you find the money for him. That's not the problem. The problem is that you're stuck with all these other dudes who are good players. Like, we're being quite disparaging. Well, I'm being quite disparaging of them in this show. Some of these are great footballers who've got a lot more good football in them. They just need to, it's like the Gareth Bale thing. They just need to do it somewhere else because currently the finances are not making sense.
Messi, 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 por a Messi, 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 por a Messi, por amor, Messi, por amor, 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 Messi.
With Barca's problems in Spain, PSG in France must be looking at that and thinking, we are going to win the Champions League this season, because them lot, you know, some of our big contenders anyway, are having so many problems that, well, we'll walk over them. But PSG are in a league of their own in Ligue 1.
They are, and I think we'll come to it in a bit. I think domestically it's a potential issue. But, you know, I think they've realised the way the wind's blowing and they've made it their mission to, like, force home their advantage. And as you say, not just in domestic terms, but in European terms, because they've got to a final and a semi-final. They're close in terms of the Champions League without getting all the way there. And I think you look at the signings, Wijnaldum, Hakimi, Donnarumma, all apart from Sergio Ramos, fill a need, I think. Of course, there are some who will say, well, that extra bit of leadership won't do any harm to PSG. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's already put Presnel Kimpembe's nose out of joint.
I think Sergio Ramos is signing.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's there just for leadership then, not for...
Well, I think after the injuries he's had, do you expect him to play all the games? I'm not sure if he can. And I think, you know, clearly Kimpembe, who... I think there's a discussion over whether he's truly elite or not. But certainly in terms of him being someone that they think they can get bang out of for years and years and years, I mean, clearly he's a lot longer than Sergio Ramos. Competition is always going to be an issue at a club of this size, and I think it's something you can get past. But I can see all of those signings fill a need that maybe Ramos doesn't. It feels to me we're signing Sergio Ramos because we can sign Sergio Ramos.
I also... feel I get that, but doesn't it also give Pochettino a much more obvious option of going to three at the back? Because you've brought in Hakimi as well, who is notionally a right back, but he's an extraordinarily attacking one.
Yeah, well, and Zidane didn't see that, did he?
And has really played his best football as a wing back.
Yeah,
and the fact that you have three very very good centre halves. Mm. And one who you can imagine an aging Sergio Ramos be very happy playing in a three, where in Liga, when he's allowed to sort of roam around and do his thing a little bit. I mean,
I don't just think it's about getting in the team. I think it's about dressing room hierarchy.
Of course, I'm just saying.
I think that's part of it.
It gives Pochettino an option, but you're right. This has obviously been PSG's biggest problem. Maybe is how they react when things go against them. Mm. And has been very much been like babies very often. Like they react terribly. and getting someone in who probably won't stand for that sort of nonsense, you would imagine, is good. No?
Also, I think the feeling is that the elephant in the room at the moment, to use your phrase, is Mbappe. Because year left on his contract, I think there's a misunderstanding, and maybe quite willful misunderstanding, in certain sections of the Spanish media that, well, if he doesn't sign again going into the last year of his contract, they're going to have to sell him to Real Madrid. They're the one club in the world that don't really have to worry about that, because no one out there can give Mbappe the same amount of money. Can they give him the sporting project that he wants as well? That's the question. That's the question that he needs answered. And they're doing their best to respond to that. Now, maybe the best signing of all these, I don't know what you think, Lars, maybe the best signing is Mauricio Pochettino getting that extra year for them to feel that, you know, there's focus on, there's not just players, but there's focus on the football side. There's a plan on how to develop that side. There's a plan to work on the younger players. There's a plan to create a proper structure and philosophy of playing. Because if I'm Mbappe, I think even if Real Madrid did have the means to sign me and PSG did have the will to sell me, which they definitely don't this summer, what can they surround me with? Because they haven't got that much money.
I take that, but I kind of want to put this question to you, Andy. As I know French football is very dear to your heart, and Ligue 1 is a league you follow
and obviously
very closely.
PSG are as well.
Of course, of course. But I don't want to be too insulting by suggesting maybe with Mbappe, is it not just part of just not wanting to play in France anymore? Like feeling like he's been there, he's won a bunch of titles, he's playing for this sort of unstoppable Death Star in that league, even though they did manage to stop themselves last year. Moving on to Real Madrid or to wherever is just part of a career progression for him, like in terms of becoming recognised as the best striker in the world. Can you even be recognised as the best in the world but while playing in France?
I think there's good logic to that. I think there's also a sense of he's not that old. He's not making this decision when he's 26 or 27. To me, the best solution for him would be sign the Theo Walcott thing. sign the midpoint deal. Don't commit for 4 years. Don't commit for 5 years. Sign for 2 years plus one or something, and a year's option or something like that. Because then you can let Real Madrid build themselves into closer to what you want to be. It feels to me as if it would be very unfulfilling playing there at the moment. The idea, the concept is fantastic. They cannot give him what he wants on a sporting level at the moment. I would want, if I was him, the sporting structure and the squad to be better when I arrived. And if he leaves that till he's 24, then what's the issue with that? Because he'll still be competitive for the Champions League in the meantime.
It's a good point. I mean, we always think of Real Madrid as having this incredible pull, and of course they do. But the reality of it now is the question next season, do you want to play next to Neymar or do you want to play next to Bale and Hazard, I guess? I mean, this is kind of where you're at.
Yeah.
And especially, and I also think the rumours of them looking at Paul Pogba are really interesting, because that would be another move to me. Obviously, he's a player who would fit their team and their concept really well, but also someone who Mbappe might enjoy playing with. He seems to enjoy playing with them for the national team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the question is, it is quite a difficult balance to convince him. And you talked about it when you said, can he be recognised as the absolute best when he's still playing in France? If there was a season that had the potential to push you over the edge in that that sort of thinking, it could be now. Hmm. Because you look at the uncertainty over the TV deal. Of course, Nice and Rennes are spending some money. No one else is able to spend any money without selling. Even Marseille are trying to make a splash. A lot of their signings, like Cengiz Under, like Paul Lopez, like Matteo Guendouzi. I know, it's exciting, people.
I was making a real splash.
Their names, they're meant to have a certain effect, but they're all loans. And it's interesting here, we've got a tweet from Max, actually. He says, in all honesty, can Lille retain Ligue 1 this season? Ready to be corrected on this, given I don't know much about him, but a quick look at Jocelyn Gourvenec's recent track record in management, e.g. a spell 2 at Gangamp, doesn't inspire confidence. I would say that's fair, Max, because the moment that Christophe Galtier leaves for Nice, they're shopping at a considerably lower level. And it's clear that Galtier performed miracles there, first in getting them to avoid relegation, then back in the Champions League, and then to win the title. He's built a good team, but can they be as good when clearly some elements are going to leave at some point, but also when they're being coached by someone who's nowhere near the same level of as Christophe Galtier? And it feels to me that, going back to your point, if PSG win the title by, say, 15, 20 points this season, maybe that's something that makes your mind up if you're Mbappe.
I think it's a case of two projects at PSG, though, isn't it? There's one project which is Champions League, which I suppose is their destiny. That's the one that they really want, and that would keep Mbappe there, amongst other things. And then there is Ligue 1 still to consider. You mentioned a moment or two ago, Lars, that they had brought in, Sergio Ramos. You're not expecting him to play.
I think he'll play the bigger games, and then maybe, like, if you're playing away to Nîmes or Strasbourg and you're going to get kicked around in the rain in November and you think maybe this, we don't necessarily need...
That's the pudding if you're Sergio Ramos.
He can have a mysterious hamstring with Neymar.
But of those two projects, one is within their control if they make the right decisions, which is the Champions League, arguably, whereas the other one is all down to the TV deal, this TV thing that has gone belly up in front.
I understand the thinking, but I would like to interject that I don't think the Champions League can ever be a project, because you're talking about such tiny sample sizes. I don't think it's possible. I mean, I know some of them probably do. I just think it's pure hubris. I don't think you can go into a season and say our project, our end goal is to win the Champions League here. Because at the end of the day, you're talking about like a 50-55 game season, and everything disappears, because you can have 10 minutes where people switch off a bit in a semi-final and it's all done. And I think it's just not a healthy state of affairs for a club if you've decided that whatever else we do, if we don't win the Champions League, it's been bad. Like,
I agree.
It just isn't rational.
And for all the criticism of Leonardo, what he's understood really well is, after, as we said, getting to a final and semi-final in the last 2 years, we're in the right spot.
Yeah.
We're heading in the right direction. Yeah. Because you can't just say, yeah, because you had a poor half here or a bad draw there. You know, there's more chance involved than people would like to believe.
Exactly right. And I think you can put yourself in a position where we're one of the best 10, 8 teams in the continent now, and we can reasonably expect to find ourselves in the quarterfinal, semifinal. That's fine. But then when you get to that stage, the margins are so fine, like weird things can happen. I kind of object to that. But I also don't know. You were suggesting that maybe this is a season where, because PSG are going to run away with it, we think Mbappe might be recognised as the man. I wonder if that could actually be counter effective.
No, that was not my point, actually. My point was
the opposite.
Is this the point where he thinks, I've done it all?
Yeah, exactly. That was what I was saying. And I think if because of the TV deal and the fact that everyone's in trouble financially and the fact that really none...
The future looks bleak. Yeah. I mean, there's no
really
getting away
none
from
of the competitors look like thinking... I mean, and I'm delighted if I'm wrong. Like, we have a team like Lille last season. Yeah. Maybe a Lyon resurgence, Andy. I don't know. But realistically, no one looks like they can compete with them. They really should win the league at a counter unless they have a lot of weird injuries or something. And Mbappe scores 40 goals or whatever. People are just going to say, it's a terrible league. Like, it doesn't matter. So in terms of his quest as being recognised as the best forward in the world, I think actually a barnstorming, sort of utterly dominant PSG season might actually work against itself.
Just remind me.
It's a bizarre thing to say out loud.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Where are we at with the TV deal very quickly? Because last season, basically, they didn't have the money to pay all these clubs, did they?
Oh, well, Amazon have swooped in, which is quite an interesting part of that. They've got 80% of the rights that were dropped by Media Pro when they couldn't make the payments. They are paying less than half Amazon of what Media Pro were paying, which leaves us in the unusual position of beIN Sports, which also run PSG. They had bought and sublicensed the other 20% of rights to Canal Plus, and Canal and beIN to a lesser extent are very annoyed that they are paying more for the 20% than Amazon are paying for that 80. So this is not over by a long chalk, and with a couple of weeks just to go, well, less than a couple of weeks, week and a half to go until the opening weekend of the season, we don't know if the two biggest games of the weekend will actually be available to watch on TV.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year. just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Join me, Jaguar, the host of BBC Introducing Dance on Radio 1 for my brand new podcast, Utopia Talks. It's a reactive platform to discuss issues that my generation care about in dance music culture and the wider world. I'll be talking to some of the biggest names in dance music, including people like Heidi.
The lineups do not need to be 99% male-driven. Mm. There's all these interesting new producers and women that are coming through, you know, all sorts. Yeah. It's like women are speaking out now.
And the sensational Bless Madonna.
I feel like literally my entire life has led up to this. This is the first event we've had like this, not just in the UK, but really in the Western Hemisphere. And to be able to be here with all of these people who are so happy is just absolutely the biggest, highest joy of my life.
As well as having the meaty conversations I often have with friends that I'd love you to join in with.
There's so much new energy coming out of the pandemic, and there's so many like new nights and festivals, and everyone's really pushing for this new structure where people genuinely don't feel anxious about coming to a club night because of the way they look or the way they dress. It's more about everyone in.
To me, Utopia is a perfect moment. It's togetherness. It's the future. I want to live in a more inclusive, equal world, and I hope this podcast will build a community and help create change. Subscribe now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. New episodes dropping every Wednesday. Welcome to Utopia Talks.
Utopia Talks is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Incredibly, the Champions League is underway already, but it's underway. I don't mean to be
disparaging.
It's
been underway for a while. Yeah, come on.
Indeed.
While the Euros were still happening, it had started.
It's underway in that stage where you have to get your map out to see where it's actually going to go on tour at the moment in places that, you know, we wouldn't normally talk about. Nevertheless, it is underway, and I suppose it's a great time to look at the second qualifying round and the second leg this week.
Yeah, and a couple of big teams fall in already, as we mentioned on the ramble. Celtic and Galatasaray are both going completely unprepared for this. Their teams are in such a state of flux at the moment. I know Celtic fans are kind of frothing at their board, and there's a similar feeling in Istanbul about
that first leg. Andy, did you watch that game? Because I missed it. PSV Galatasaray. The result was quite something,
but Galatasaray got off lightly with the 5-1.
Ooh.
They weren't good. They weren't good in the second leg either, which they weren't able to play at the TT Arena because the pitch is being done. So that's played at Bajak Shahir Stadium, which nicely enough is named after Fatih Terim, but still not the ideal situation. There was a huge gap between PSV and Galatasaray. So Galatasaray are straight down, as we were saying, into the Europa League with its qualifier with St Johnstone. They've got a lot to do. They've brought in a couple of fullbacks this week in Sacha Boye and Patrick Van Aanholt that they really could have done with before. It's really difficult, I think, when at this stage in the season, clubs like this, and they are huge in their countries, Galatasaray, Celtic, Dinamo Zagreb, Olympiacos, that you're playing matches that shape the whole destiny of your season when you can't possibly be ready. Mm. Now, so much of that is down to the board and the recruiters at a club to say, look, let's get everything sorted and let's make sure we have a serviceable team out there. It's really difficult because you have to start pre-season super early. You have to be at elite level to play these games of high importance, which you can't possibly be.
But that's the same for all the clubs.
It is, but for the biggest ones, it means so much more. So, you know, we saw Pavel Verba, the coach of Sparta Prague, sort of doing somersaults on the pitch after his team beat Rapid Vienna. But for Sparta Prague, if they're getting closer to a guaranteed Europa League place before we even talk about the Champions League, then that's fantastic. For Galatasaray or Celtic, when you get knocked out of the Champions League before the group stages, it has a massive effect. And it clearly has a massive financial effect. And I guess that's half of the problem, isn't it, really, Lars? The fact that it's all very well for us to sit here and talk about planning and you need to have your ducks in a row and you need to have a good team ready. A, can those players actually be physically and mentally ready at this point in the season? And B, can you commit the money to the players knowing that you might not get the Champions League money at the end of it? Because in the second qualifying round, you're still absolutely miles off.
Yeah, and the trick here is that for clubs from these in lesser leagues, sounds weird, sounds bad, but from the smaller leagues around Europe.
So less recognised?
Yeah, less recognised. And financially less strong. Whenever you're successful enough to get into the Champions League qualifiers, it means you've had a really good year, which means that you've been under a lot of pressure to sell your best players. You know, that's just the way it goes. And funnily enough, you mentioned that they're not ready because it's coming early in the season. I get that. We kind of have a different problem in Norway because Bodø Glimt went in the last round and the first sort of qualifiers before this round against the Polish champions Legia Warsaw. Their problem was they won the league ages ago. Like, they won the league before Christmas. You know, our league finished last year. And when a team from Norway, and particularly an outsider like Bodø Glimt, surprise and do well, what happens is they get picked off. So they won the league in Norway before Christmas and have since then lost their entire front three. I mean, Jens Petter Hauge went to Milan and Zinkenlager went to Watford. And the striker, the Danish striker who really wanted to go somewhere, went to Korea. I've completely forgotten his name now. That's terrible.
Hauge's maybe moving again. That's how long ago they won the league, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's been linked with Eintracht Frankfurt.
Absolutely. And so they've lost their entire front three from the champion season. So now when they finally get to I'm not even going to look up his name because he was an ass about it. He was like, oh, I'm going to leave. He went on strike. He left the team hotel when they were on a training camp in Spain because he wanted to force a move, and then he ended up in South Korea. So, you know, off you go. No, I'm not going to look up your name.
You're not eligible for a mention on the continent anymore, mate.
I'm crossed with how that thing went down. But so yeah, so when they finally have a chance to maybe make it into the Champions League proper, or even just get one stage further so that you have a shot at being guaranteed the group stage in the Europa League, the team that won the league has effectively been dismantled, and that makes it really, really difficult for them, even though they should have the advantage of being in the middle of a season. So that's really odd.
Next week is round three, and any interesting teams to think about for round three at all?
Well, we talked about Sparta Prague getting through. They're playing Monaco, who again have been adapting their whole pre-season to playing this. They were the third place team in France. You've got Benfica versus Spartak Moscow, which is the Rui Vitória derby. Rui Vitória, who was great at Benfica, the coach has just taken over Spartak Moscow and caused a minor civil war in the boards there. But the early signs of in pre-season were quite interesting in terms of them playing football, even though they lost on the opening day of the Russian Premier League. Shakhtar Donetsk are getting involved.
I think
Rangers playing Malmö.
Yeah, Rangers playing Malmö. I think we're all watching Shakhtar because of the Roberto Di Zerbi thing. His Sassuolo team last season was one of the more exciting sort of hipster favourites of the continent. He's now gone to Shakhtar, which is an unusual move.
And they've provided him with some resource, some quite funky signings. Lassina Traore's right from Ajax.
Definitely. definitely a team to look at if you're unsure what to switch on the night. I'm obviously intrigued by PSV versus FC Midtjylland. Who beat Celtic. We're very, very happy with that. I mean, they were the better team on the night. As their managing director said after the game a couple of years ago, we would have conceded a goal somewhere, but they managed to close it out because they're a team who have a bit of European experience now, who, because they were in the group stage of the Champions League, they've brought in some money, so they've been able to reinvest a little bit. So perhaps they might be able to build something, but of course, PSV are pretty decent, as Galatasaray discovered.
Yeah.
And who are another team, you know, who will be interesting to watch now.
I have to say, it's been super fun to see Mario Götze smashing it already.
Yeah.
I mean, he's someone who's not used to being in the second qualifying round of the Champions League.
And we talk about interesting managers. I mean, Roger Schmidt, former hipster favourite Roger Schmidt, yeah, who was fated as someone who would go the sort of Klopp and Tuchel way of being a sort of high-pressing, exciting manager. Things didn't quite work out for him at Leverkusen in the end. He then went to China for a bit, and now he's turned up again at PSV. Very interesting to see how they go in Europe with Mario Götze, of course.
Now, we haven't got games of the week for you, as we would normally do towards the end of on the continent. For obvious reasons, perhaps, there aren't a lot of games to choose from. But instead, we are going to turn to some of your questions that you've been sending us on social media. Do remember that if you'd like to join in with any questions of your own at any point in the season, then it's at Football Ramble, or if you prefer, at Lars Severston, at Andy Brassel, or at Dotton Adebayo. This goes straight to Lars's head. How does Lars see this season playing out for his number one and number two boys? And you know who they are.
Well,
I'll tell you. Ødegaard and Haaland. Maybe not in that.
Of course.
Yeah.
How I see the season turning off them? I mean, I think Erling Haaland will keep scoring goals for Dortmund. I'm really intrigued to see how the managerial change in Dortmund will affect things for him. You know, Marco Rose has if his Gladbach team is anything to go by, and you know the fact his background is from the Red Bull system, you certainly expect him to play more of a pressing style. And Erling Haaland, it's not that he's not lazy by any means. The guy is, you know, look at the guy, but last season he was allowed to not spend a lot of energy chasing the ball all the time. Like, he will occasionally go after it, but he doesn't press an awful lot. I mean, he has been allowed to save himself, so he's ready. He has the energy to make those darts into the box and all those sort of sprints. Wonder if Marco Rosa probably will ask a little bit more of him off the ball. That wouldn't surprise me. It'll be interesting to see how he reacts to that. But of course, Rosa has worked with him before at Salzburg. I think that's probably a little bit of an advantage. And he's lost his chief creator and friend, Jadon Sancho. No, I'm still pretty confident it'll be another year of many, many Erling Haaland goals before a big transfer next summer, possibly. Martin Ødegaard is really interesting because you would imagine that he would have more of a shot at Real Madrid now, since frankly, if you look at Real Madrid, their squad, they need to phase in the younger players more now. They need to stop. It can't be that team that won the Champions League a bunch of times. There's a generational shift that has to happen. And if you look at the young players in the squad, Ødegaard is one of the ones who have the talent to potentially make it at Real Madrid. And now that Zidane is no longer there, Zidane clearly didn't fancy him, you would think he would have more of a chance under Ancelotti. But then you see little sort of rumors surface that maybe he's not that happy, and maybe the transfer to Arsenal could happen anyway. And just, I feel like that situation isn't entirely settled. But what he said in the Norwegian press a while back was that he's a Real Madrid player, and he sees himself playing for Real Madrid next season. But that one's not entirely set in stone right now, I don't think.
Yeah, that question was from Brad, by the way. And just for the record, who is your number one and who's your number two?
Just out of geographical bias, Erling Haaland, because he grew up in the same town as me. You know, you can't beat that.
This question is from Gautam, who says, wanted to ask all three of you, and I'll stay out of this one, what kind of football do you guys expect Nagelsmann to play at Bayern? And will it be fun to watch like it was under Flick?
I'm hopeful. I think Not to say that the job for Flick was easy, because it was far from easy, because he took over at a point where Bayern were in a mess. I mean, Niko Kovac was fired after they lost 5-1 at Eintracht Frankfurt. But I think he had an advantage in that he'd already been working with the squad. He had a good relationship with them. The difficulty here for Nagelsmann is, especially after the summer of the Euros, his players are coming back in dribs and drabs. He's done his first couple of friendlies with basically a C team, you know, with Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting, and you know we love him on here, the captain. So I think it's going to be probably October, November until Bayern really hit their straps, because he's someone with a very strong philosophy on the game, but he's got to relate to the players and coach them into what he wants with really no time to do it. I think it's incredibly difficult. And also, we know he likes to press and break, but going way back to when he was at Hoffenheim, in the last season and a half at Hoffenheim, he develops different ways of them playing. So they can press, they can sit off, they can counter and be a reactive team, or they can be on the front foot. Now, the countering, I don't think will be nearly as necessary at Bayern. And if he's smart, he plays to the strengths of the team that are already there. I think maybe he doesn't play such a high defence as Flick. I think that's something that could be important. And I think for him to have Dayo Upamecano, a player who gets the way he wants to play defensively in the team, that's super helpful. And it sounds weird for a player like that to come in and sort of lead the team, but I think as it's a relatively young team, and because I suspect both Kimmich and Goretzka will be next to each other in midfield, I think he can do that. And I think he needs that. It's good to have someone who can transmit your ideas on the pitch. So it'll be a learning curve for Nagelsmann and for Upamecano. But I feel that working together, they'll be able to do that pretty well. And of course, so much is about getting more out of the existing players. Like as Lars was saying, Leroy Sané, who's disappointed so far.
Lars, you're coming on that, off the back of that?
No, I thought it was good.
Well, good enough.
I love that. Thank you very much.
It gets better. This is from Rob. For both of you, I guess, again, any new signings into the Premier League and also in other leagues to look out for? I'm thinking not just big name signings, more those hidden gems. Or what about any breakout youth players to keep an eye on? Last for us.
So I thought Andy was very mischievous earlier, but I think he made a very good shout in saying that if you're a pretty big club and you're one of the clubs who are fortunate enough to have a bit of money now, you'd go to Barcelona and just go, no, you can keep your Griezmanns and your Coutinhos, not having that. But Ansu Fati and you know, test him. See 40 million francs for Fati. See what you say. I don't think
40
that
40 million.
They really need the money, Andy.
They do.
I don't think it'll happen. I'm just saying, if you're being slightly mischievous,
if you were whispering in Barcelona ears, would you say 40 million? You know, his youth product is pure profit. It's pure profit in the books.
How much throw? I can make it 60 if you throw in Moriba.
You see, he's wasted here, not being a sporting director. I don't know if Rob was asking about signings that have already been made as well. If that's the case, a couple that I'm really looking forward to seeing. At Watford, they've signed Imran Louza from Nantes. Left foot, very, very creative. I think he's developing into an interesting player. And I think if you look at Watford signings, give or take Danny Rose, it feels as if a lot of it is angled towards the future. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on, how much of a role he can take on in that team. So I really like him, and I think he can become really good. I like at Norwich, a couple of their signings, Milot Rashica, who had a poor season last time around, would have got a move to a bigger club. He's been linked with Aston Villa last year, but I think he would have got a move to like a much bigger German club, perhaps, if it had gone a bit better for him last season. But there's so much talent in there. Winger who can play on either side, can score goals, take free kicks. And I really like as well Pierre Lismelo who has joined them from Nice, midfielder, super industrious, very creative as well. So I really want to see how those guys fit in. Yeah, I like Norwich's window. Of course, they've got Billy Gilmore as well.
Yeah, I should stress, because the internet is the internet, I don't particularly think Barcelona will sell Ansu Fati for 40 or 50 million. I was just stirring the pot a little bit. On a more serious...
It's all right, they're not sensitive fans. I think
no,
they're
no sensitive fans in the internet, good Lord. I'm intrigued to see how Frank Onyeka gets on at Brentford, a Nigerian midfielder they brought in from FC Midtjylland in Denmark. Very energetic, very feisty midfielder who... physically capable, can really run. He's someone who they've developed very well at Midtjylland, and I think he'll add something off the ball to Brentford. Of course, Brentford came up playing very sort of possession focused football, keep the ball very well. I mean, that may be a little bit harder for them to do in the Premier League. In Onyeka, they've added a midfielder who will press off the ball, give a lot of energy and power to that midfield. So I hope he gets on well.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.